All right, welcome to another episode of Rosenball's NBA betting. NBA season tournament is in full effect. We're not going to talk about that. Talking about sort of like a early quarterly point in the NBA season. Going to do wrap around a couple of teams. First, looking at the standings real quick. Look at some of the top teams in both conferences. We have to ask ourselves, is this real or is this not? I think the two teams that stand out, we'll start with the West. The Minnesota Timberwolves are the top team. I think a lot of these early standings, obviously, you have to look at strength of schedule. But you also have to look at health, right? And the Wolves, I think, while their rotation is clean now, they have an adult point guard, as I keep saying, Mike Connolly. Kyle Anderson has been embedded nicely in the rotation now for a full year. And sort of the lineup starts making sense. I think their front court, that big man rotation of Towns, Gobert, Naz Reid is as good as anybody's in the league. And now you can supplement that with Kyle Anderson, Edwards, and that third wing is probably sort of the question mark. McDaniels, that's a solid rotation. They have Connolly and Alexander Walker. So it's a clean eight man. Look, you have to ask yourself, is Edwards taking the step? Do they have the firepower to really continue this on? I would still wary a little bit. I think the biggest surprise of all those guys, honestly, is actually Nickeil Alexander-Walker. He's been fantastic as the backup point guard. Give them some wing opportunity as well. I think they're more likely to be a top six. I think they're benefiting from the other, let's call them, notable Western teams, not being as great off the bat. I was low in Golden State, but you got to figure at some point they'll make a run. The LA teams as well. And then who knows what's going to happen with Memphis when John Morant comes back, right? That's going to happen fairly soon. He's been out for 25 games. So I'm still going to say Minnesota's a mirage. I will. I don't believe that they're going to finish with a top four, top three. If they do, then Finch has cemented a coach of the year nomination for sure, at the very least. Moving to the East. So, look, I was high in Indiana. Indiana's off to a strong start. We had a relatively easy schedule, but they are just an absurdly deep and offensively riddled team. All these teams, it's funny, when you look around the league, a bunch of teams have, like, a guy that eventually needs to get traded. That's the only way the team is going to mature, okay? Kind of go through this a little bit. It kind of reminds me of like when Minnesota eventually moved Wiggins, then eventually moved Russell. Celtics moved Smart. Like, if you look at the data, it's not that hard to determine, right? In Chicago right now is LaVine. We've talked about that ad nauseum. But for Indiana, it's Miles Turner. Like, there's a reason why he's always been on the trade block. And it goes as far back as, like, the post-bubble when the Celtics weren't sure about Hayward and what to do with him. They had an opportunity to move him for Miles Turner. And the Celtics were on the fence about that. But the fact that the Pacers wanted to do that deal has got to be a little troublesome for Miles Turner's standpoint. Like, I think they realize he's kind of overrated. So, the issue with Turner I have is, like, if you're decent at something in the NBA, but the player thinks he's, like, really good at it, that's an issue, right? So Miles Turner, I think, shoots too many threes. He's capable of hitting a three, but, like, you don't want him shooting that many threes. So, and I don't know how you work that with him, right? Like, it's hard to do that as a shooter. But when you're in that 34% range, particularly as a center, that's the concern. Now, look, his shot blocking numbers are there, but shot blocking, as you learned from Hassan Whiteside, could be somewhat of a deceptive stat. That means, sometimes you're a little late on the rotation and or someone beat you, and then you're trying to suffice it with a shot block. Now, it's great that you can block shots, but also what's your foul rate? So it's something you just got to look at. I don't know if they're better with Turner. I just don't. Goga's playing great in Orlando. He left Indiana. They have Jalen Smith there, who would just give them more offensive firepower. He's a better shooter. They got Isaiah Jackson. And they have Obi Toppin, who can play some small ball five. So I don't. That's the guy for Indiana. They have to reconsider. The other team that's really been surprising in the East is a couple. Well, Philly, I think, really interesting case study. You know, Nick Nurse, I think, showing his coaching chops, putting Nick Embiid in these high post situations to you know, orchestrate offense through the center. And it's funny, like, you're seeing that transition, by the way, in the NBA. Used to be very point guard, pick and roll driven. Now you're seeing a lot of center high post action. People learning from the Jokic stuff. Sengun, if you will, in Houston. And Embiid now in Philly. I'm curious if this thought process continues and you can see more centers operating in the high post and kind of being the, you know, somewhat of a focal point of offense. You saw this with Joakim Noah, by the way, in Chicago years ago when he was actually an MVP candidate. So funny how some teams are coming back to that. But Philly's doing that. That's one of the reasons behind their success. The other shocker in the East, though, was Orlando. Orlando's been quite good. Now, I think people had them in the definitely a lot of people have them in the low-end playoffs, making the bubble. I still think they're in that range. The biggest thing in Orlando has been two things. Jonathan Isaac's back. He provides them a nice little rotational 3/4, play small ball 5, one of the best defenders in the NBA. The second thing is drastic improvement from Jalen Suggs. Suggs, I thought, was a point guard or bust. He's showing ability as a 2, and his steals rate's out of control. He's just thieving everything, you know, driving a ton of turnovers. That's been promising. The other thing that's been promising, as we talked about it right before, was Goga. They added Goga, and now their center depth looks pretty good. You got Carter, Goga, Moritz Wagner. Not bad. And now you got Bankero Isaac, so they're with Wagner there, so the 3-4-5 rotation's fantastic. At the 1-2, Suggs is supplementing a lot with Fultz. Not getting, you know, Gary Harris is here and there. Brian Houston, not a lot. So obviously, you know, I think Orlando has been improving their backcourt. But the Joe Ingles pickup has also been great. So I think those two things, I think adding Ingles, adding, you know, Isaac's back in there, and Suggs has really been the improvement for Orlando. That's a big surprise. Now we go into, like, the dark team, which we actually like talking about more. So there's a couple of dregs in the NBA, and there was a battle of the dregs last night. I love watching the worst teams in the NBA. I don't know why, but I do. And I saw a lot of the Detroit-Washington game. I've been watching a lot of both teams. So Detroit, not in a must-win. Like, you're 2-14. You're playing against another 2-14 team at home. You got to find a way to win that. They get blown out. They got blown out at home by the 2-14 Washington Wizards. What is happening in Detroit? This is just on pace for some horrorness. And you would think, like, talent-wise, you know, they have some elements, right? Like, they have a lot of good individual talent. So what's been going on in Detroit? So first, let's put some of the excuses in there. Bogey's been hurt to start the year. Okay, it's an issue, right? They had Bogey last year. He's a great spacer in a team deprived of spacing. Second thing is Jalen Duren has been in and out of the lineup. He's probably the most impactful player on the team. Probably their best player right now. So, you know, their defense relies on him, and that's obviously concerned his defense. Some positives, let's just say it. Oscar Thompson, I think, has been a great rookie. That was the right selection. But now some concerns. So here's some concerns with Detroit. One is the fit is obviously horrible. We knew this, but it just, while everyone knows this, it doesn't seem to get resurrected. So a couple things with the fit. First is, yes, Cade, Ivy, Thompson, and now Hayes is in the rotation again. Horrible thing. As I said before, and I'll keep saying it, is like, I don't think you have to throw in guys in a unit. Like, why does Alec Burks not start for this team? Right? Like, if you really wanted to, you know, get some position flexibility, spacing in the first unit, you got to throw Burks in there. So that's the first thing. But look, the spacing is not working. And it tells you, like, first off, like, the talent thing should trump to an extent, but, like, how good are these guys, honestly? And I think there's almost like a two steps Detroit needs to take. The first step is, do we want to build around any of these guys? Like, I think that's what you first need to discover as a rebuild process. And That doesn't mean you need to trade everybody. So there's two ways around it. You could trade for fit, or you could rework your rotation for fit, right? So, and I think they've kind of tried this, but not really. And I'll explain. So, look, if you start prioritizing your youth and you have Cade, Ivy, Thompson as the main, like, wing guys with Hayes in there, I guess, how do you work your rotation to maximize all of them? So I think first you have to decide, like, is Ivy and Cade really coexist in the starting lineup? I think they've tried to stagger them. In late, they're starting Ivy now, probably because they put him on a six-man, didn't really work out. They have to figure that out. I think what I would do is I would at least try to put some of those guys in a far better position to be successful, nail down one unit. And I think if you start either – and look, Monte Morris has been out too. I can't deny that either. He's been a much-needed spacer that they don't have. He was a big potential addition for them. So one thing is on – you know, the point guard. I don't know that Cade should be my starting point guard. Maybe I should put him at the two and Thompson at the three, and maybe I try starting Marcus Sasser and get some spacing out of the one, right? Just get a pure spacer. That's one thought. Another thought, as we discussed, is you throw Burks in there. So I think either or. I would probably stagger, honestly, Burks and Sasser in that such a unit in a positive way because you need to be spacing. So if you do that rotation, and you throw Ivy off the bench, Ivy's six-man, let him dominate second unit, it's interesting. But the major concern, honestly, is, like, the way things are rolling right now, Ivy's value is going to dip. It already has, okay? People were hot on him to start, but now you don't have, like, that flair. You have some of it, and some people will take a shot at it. And I do think you need to explore that option of moving Ivy. I don't know if it's going to work. That doesn't mean that Cade is safe either. It just means get players in that are clean up your rotation. Right now, if you're Detroit, the thing we did talk about, they don't have a small ball four long-term. Bogey, he's been hurt. Obviously, this year, he's a revolving door on D. So you need a better defensive small ball four long-term anyway. And I think the Pistons need to really consider what Ivy yields in a trade, right? So if you're looking at scoping around the league of who could take Ivy, I think there's a couple of teams. I think you have a team like Chicago, who is also in a fork in the road. Maybe we get a guy we can rebuild around. In Ivy, maybe that's a chance of LaVine in a three-way. I wouldn't acquire LaVine if I was Detroit. I think that would be quite silly. I know they need spacing, but I don't know. I feel like that could get a little crazy. Just, he's going to occupy too much usage. You need smart players who complement. So, if you're Chicago, I think Patrick Williams is a target. I like Washington with Denny Avigia. He's been one of the better all defenders, and his shot has been drastically improved. He makes more sense as a small ball four. So, is it a one-for-one? No. I think you get, like, Denny, you take a flyer on Johnny Davis. Patrick Williams, you probably need to throw Bogey in that and then take him and ball back. But those are some targets. I explore more, right? I think, do you go for, a veteran? I don't think you need to, you don't need to go, here's the thing. You don't have to get a guy who's like 20. You don't have to get a guy who's 30 either. You can do in between, right? So you have Toronto situation, the OG and Anobi, they're not going anywhere. That's an option, okay? and again, that makes, he's more of a wing there, but it still like helps supplement. They definitely need a 3-and-D spacer, and Ivy is the guy that has to be moved in that effort as I drive through a snowstorm. Brooklyn is another team that I think is going to be extremely interesting. They don't really have a face of the franchise. They're kind of in purgatory accidentally right now. Simmons has been out for the year. So they have a ton of these like sort of off-the-ball wings of Royce O'Neal, you know, Cam Thomas, Dorian Finney-Smith. Do you consider a move there? It's an option, right? You're not going to get Mikal Bridges. That's crazy talk. Cam Johnson's interesting. Again, he's kind of older, though. So, you know, there's a combination that could work with those teams. You look at, you know, Houston's happy with Van Fleet. That's not an option. Terry Eason was another guy I would look at, who's just good, but, like, they have Jabari Smith ahead of him. You know, again, that could be a three-way opportunity maybe. But Terry Eason would be a nice young, you know, four long-term, kind of a better shooting, younger P.J. Tucker, I see him. So that's one option. But, like, they're also just not, and maybe this is the answer, they're just not that good, right? Like, these guys that they just kept long-term are not NBA caliber rotational talents. And they've now, you know, put money on Beef Stew, which, you know, and James Wiseman is coming, Bagley's coming. I mean, it's just a glut of, you know, things that aren't great. And they're gonna have to crawl, walk, run out of this thing. I think the first stage is simplifying the unit. We always talk about this. The rotations that work in the NBA are clean. They make sense. The pieces complement, right? There's some guys that can play, which is a big deal. So I think the first thing you do is, yes, you move Ivy for pieces that make sense and that, you know, now you're giving Monty Williams a rotation that he could work with that at least is suitable on paper. And then the team just looks more competitive, and then you're hoping Cade and Thompson continue to evolve, and then you build it out in the draft and free agency. The free agent move, which, again, I don't knock this, but they got Joe Harris in that trade. Joe Harris, I like him, but I think they thought he was going to give them something. He's given them a little bit, but not really a rotational piece. So he could be included in a trade as well with Ivy. But the teams that are interested in Ivy are the same teams that are interested in Scoot, right? Someone that's willing to take, like, a chance at a guard that could give some usage to and develop around him. And I think Ivy is going to be a good player. Just, I've never seen a situation where you have, like, three guys at Ivy, Thompson, and Cade and find a way to coexist that. And if you feel like Ivy's a long-term sixth man, then unfortunately that's your answer. Like, that means you got to move. Lest you become Philadelphia with Markelle Fultz, moved them for Simmons and all that. And Ivy can have a similar fate where, you know, his value depreciates to such a gross extent, and then he does well elsewhere, like Fultz has done in Orlando. I like the Toronto idea, right? If you're going to pay OG. That, to me, and again, a lot of these could be a little bit of an overpay, but you got to do it for fit. OG's at least young. That's obviously on condition you think you're going to keep him. Which I know is not a slam dunk by any means. But yeah, hopefully if you can keep him, then, you know, OG becomes probably the most logical, interesting piece out of the pieces that are feasible. Now the question is Toronto going to realize that or do that? Again, not going anywhere, but if they have Ivy now, you got Barnes and Siakam, it's interesting. And if Schroeder's the only guy you're trying to fight in a rotation spot, I mean, you know, you could fight that. So I do like that match as a sensible one. The question is, how much more pieces is Detroit going to need to give in terms of picks and all that? You know, you can't really sacrifice so many future assets at this stage. It's kind of ridiculous. But a lot of this is going to come down to what they do with Ivy. They just got to take it from there. And the other drag is Washington. Right? And Washington, you can argue, is in a worse spot because now they got Poole long-term, they got Kuzma long-term, and Poole loves it. He's saying it like, look, you know, Malcolm Gladwell writes about this. It's better to be, you know, a big fish in a small pond for self-confidence, at the very least, right? Like, it's better to get the scholarship from Michigan than trying to sneak into Harvard, and then now you're one of the worst students there versus being a top of a Michigan-type place. So, Poole's filling that out. Washington, you know, he was a rotation piece on a title team, and now he's the best player on the worst team. And he's ecstatic. I got to say, Washington, D.C. sports might be the worst sport town and or just teams with the worst sports franchises of any city that's got at least three teams. And maybe just any city, period. I'm just being gracious. But the Wizards have been a disaster, Bullets, whatever. like for this period since the 70s, the closest they came to a title since Wes Unseld was like a John Wall second round exit to Boston. Really? Like, that's your peak? It's really weak. They had potential with Weber, Strickland, Howard, but they just couldn't keep it together. And then they sold that short for Mitch Richmond. This is just a horrible franchise, and it just, you know, A. Polin didn't do it wonders, bless his soul, and I don't think new ownership, Ted Leonsis, is doing any wonders either. If you're Washington, look, I think the coach is good, right? He did well a couple of years back. It's not him. I wouldn't advocate as such. So then you have to ask yourself, like, you know, I think Denny's in the right spot. Gafford's kind of weak as a starting center, I would say. And the team actually on paper looks like it's got some talent, right? If you go through it, you know, Tyus Jones, Poole, you know, Denny, Kuz, and Gafford as a starting unit feels like that should be competitive. And then you talk about the rookie Bilal, Kispert, you know, Wright, DeLon Wright, not bad. You know, you know, off the bench, Gallinari's been decent. You feel like it should do something. So if you're watching, what you're probably going to do is you're probably going to slow play it, okay? I think you need to slowly move pieces. And Washington, by the way, is the king of being bad when the drafts are terrible. Like, they lucked out on John Wall, that was good, and then Bradley Beal when like MKG really should have gone there. But you know, Johnny Davis is an air ball pick. They air ball Jan Vesely. It's an air ball. So you can't. And this draft's supposed to be deep, but not that great. So not a good year to tank. They don't have a lot of pieces that teams want either. Nobody would want, like, you're keeping Poole, obviously, and you're keeping Kuzma. Who wants these guys? Kuzma probably has value, honestly, though. And I feel like if you really wanted a tank, you can't move Poole. I think getting better defenders for Kuzma is interesting. He was on team's free agent radar. I would look into it. Do I do it? I don't know, but I would look into it. Now, there's a lot of ways you could do in such a move if you're moving Kuzma. First of all, you look at Golden State, who has Kuminga and Moody. Okay. We talked about Detroit with Ivy. That's probably a little crazy. But I think you need to throw Bilal in there. I think just removing Kuzma is okay for development. And it's a route they need to consider. Yeah, I if you're going around, I'm putting myself on the spot here. Kuzma is not, he's good. I mean, he's a good player on a bad team. Charles Barkley talks about this all the time. Like, he'll put up numbers on this team because they're not that good. So I don't know who you can get for him. But you definitely need to, you know, he's the guy. And I think what you're looking for in exchange is definitely a better long-term center than Gafford, which I think teams have. And they start scoping around. Like, Atlanta, I throw an Atlanta in there, right? So Atlanta has, I think you probably want an adult point guard, by the way. I think, you know, Tyus Jones combined with another point guard would be interesting. So Atlanta's interesting. It's an interesting idea. Just going to throw it out there. You got Murray there. You have Okungo. Okay. It's an option. Going through the teams, you have Charlotte would be interested in him. I don't know where you're going to get back. But, yeah, Atlanta's probably the best bet, honestly. I like that. I like Atlanta. Chicago's probably another one. But again, like, you're not going to take back LaVine. The whole thing is crazy. A lot of times, like, if a team is not good, it's because of the players, right, at the end of the day. And you have to analyze, like, well, it's not everybody. And it's not necessarily everybody. But it's usually the highest usage guys. If a team is, like, really, really bad, it's usually the top volume, low efficiency guy that's hurting it. And that's sort of Washington. And let's see if they fix it.